Russian aggression is Europe's new normal. That's according to NATO, which is considering sending more troops to Central and Eastern Europe. But will the plan protect the continent or worsen tensions with Moscow? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jimjoum. We face a crisis in European security. That's the warning from NATO's Secretary General. Jens Stoltenberg says the threat of Russia invading Ukraine shows Moscow is prepared to use force to undermine the core principles of the Western military alliance. For its part, Russia says its troops are now pulling back. It released videos of convoys leaving Crimea, which Russia annexed from Ukraine in 2014. But instead of pulling out, the U.S. argues another 7,000 Russian soldiers have arrived at the border with Ukraine. Stoltenberg says Europe needs stronger defenses. He's proposed sending more soldiers to Central and Eastern Europe as part of new NATO battle groups.
I think what we are seeing now is a kind of new normal for European security, because we have seen this trend over many years, where Russia contests fundamental principles for European security, and where they are and where they are willing to use force, as they've done against Ukraine, Georgia, but also to threaten with the use of force to intimidate countries in Europe.
A battle group is the main forward block of an army's fighting force. It's usually made up of about 1,500 soldiers. NATO deployed combat-ready battle groups to Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Poland in 2014 after Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimea region. In total, there are more than 4,600 multinational troops in the Baltic states and Poland. An attack on any of them would be considered an attack on NATO. Those army units hold regular exercises, including the annual winter camp, which is one of NATO's largest military drills, with around 1,400 soldiers taking part. All right, let's bring in our guests. In Brussels, Teresa Fallon, the founder and director of the Center for Russia, Europe, Asia Studies. In Belfast, Alexander Titov, a lecturer at Queen's University Belfast, who specializes in Russian foreign policy. And in the Estonian capital, Tallinn, Kadri Leek, a senior policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations, whose research focuses on Russia, Eastern Europe, and the Baltic region. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks for joining the program today. Teresa, let me start with you. So NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says that Russian aggression is the new normal for Europe. What exactly does this mean?
I think in today's press conference, after the ministerial meeting here at NATO headquarters in Brussels, that they're expecting a long, drawn-out, high-pressure tactics from Russia. So this is not something that these exercises are going to wind up, as the Russians are pretending, but he expects it to be a very long, drawn-out experience. So this means that we're seeing kind of a challenge to the Helsinki agreements back in 1975 that the Soviet Union signed, as well as Western countries. And this is kind of challenging, don't change borders through power moves. And Putin is really pushing hard to do. Analysts have said that we might be returning back to Yalta, just kind of the spheres of influence. And I think one of the most telling signs is that troops all the way from Russia's far east are moved towards Ukraine border, which means that there's a tacit agreement between Moscow and Beijing to cooperate on this. And I think that sends a very worrying sign to the rest of the world, this kind of Russia-China cooperation.
Alexander, let's look at this from the perspective of the Russians. When Russian President Vladimir Putin hears Jens Stoltenberg use the phrase new normal, that this is the new normal for Europe, what's his viewpoint? What does Putin think of that?
Well, I think Putin would say that we've been warning you for many, many years that there are problems. We want to kind of deal with them. You can't just brush our concerns aside. And now you haven't listened to us. Now you have to waste this new normal. And so far as Putin is concerned, I've been investing lots of money into the army, the navy, and so forth, and also kind of willing to use them and having used them already. He is more happy with this new norm than the Europeans. I think he can pressurize them into engaging with Russia on things which are important to Russia and which have previously been ignored. So I think it's not, so far as Putin is concerned, not saying it's a good thing, but I think from the point of view of Moscow, they're happy with that.
Kadri, so we know now that NATO is considering these new battle groups in southeastern Europe in response to Russian military buildup. Of course, there are battle groups that exist in Baltic countries. They've been there since 2014 as a response to Russia's annexation of Crimea. Have these battle groups that were placed there by NATO in Baltic countries worked in practice?
Well, that is hard to answer because we don't know what would have happened without them. But what I can say is, of course, they have made the countries feel more secure. There are different opinions as to how and why the Baltic states are even endangered by what Russia is doing. Some people in the Baltic states think that when Russia occupies Ukraine, it will move to the Baltic states next. I don't belong in that camp. I don't think that Russia really has ambitions to gain control of the Baltic states or to restore the Soviet Union or anything like that. But I think that if tensions reach a boiling point in any other theater, be it Ukraine or Syria or wherever, tensions between the West and Russia reach new heights, then actually an accidental clash in the Baltic region cannot be excluded, or Russia making use of the Baltic territory as a place where to signal its displeasure with NATO's stance elsewhere. And I think to ensure against such incidents, the troops here have been very useful indeed.
Teresa, I saw you nodding along to some of what Kadri was saying. Did you want to jump in?
Well, I think that Putin would not attack any NATO member because that would trigger Article 5. So I think, as Kadri noted, though, when you have so many troops, there is a high incidence of possible accident. So even today we saw in the Donbas, you know, there was a shelling of a school. So I think that the troop movements are signaling reassurance, but also hopefully deterrence. And there are concerns of spillage. And if, God forbid, there is some sort of conflict in Ukraine, because they have to be prepared for the worst, that these troops are sent there to kind of strengthen the border and prepare for possible millions of refugees moving from Ukraine. So I think that tensions are extremely high. And the fact that they even met with Georgia, as the Georgian minister, as well as the Ukrainian minister today, signals that they're not backing down. NATO's not backing down on their open door policy, which I think must irritate Moscow.
Teresa, let me also follow up with you about the issue of these battle groups. When it comes to the potential creation and deployment of more NATO battle groups, what kind of time frame do you think we're looking at?
I think it will take a little while, but I think they're, you know, they're moving. They already have this kind of rotational approach. So they have one third of the time with NATO, one third of the time with the EU, and then one third of the time with their own national groups. So I think it's a multinational function, and it wouldn't take too long. I don't imagine that it would take very long to really get it up and running. Lloyd Austin also spoke about that today at the press conference. And I think that they're talking about a couple of weeks. So it remains to be seen. But I don't think that it would take that long, really. There is an urgency here.
Alexandra, wouldn't the creation of these new battle groups really just further antagonize Russia? I mean, what can we expect as a response from Russian President Putin?
Well, I think there are a whole series of issues which Russians are unhappy about. The troops, battle groups, which are really, as you know, we're saying, more kind of nominal confidence boosting in, you know, in the Baltic states themselves, in Poland, rather than, you know, any threat to Russia or any real barrier to Russian invasion, if it ever came to that, is not the main issue. I think kind of issues of NATO in further enlargement in Ukraine, Georgia, but also NATO cooperation and military support for Ukraine is something much more worrying for Russia. They want to make it much wider than Ukraine, but Ukraine is still the core concern of them. I mean, so before they can deal with things which are already inside NATO, which Russia has no interest and they accepted that the countries which joined NATO have joined, the issue for them, really big one, is its security of cooperation with Ukraine. And, you know, as Ken Putin was saying, Ukraine has a disputed territory with Russia in Crimea. There is ongoing conflict in East Donbass and so forth. And generally, there is very kind of hostile to Russia government and public opinion in Ukraine, which they also unhappy about. So they want to make sure that that thing, that country, Ukraine, in terms of its military capability, does not feel kind of powerful enough to try to solve those issues, outstanding issues with Russia. And I think that's much more important than any kind of retaliatory battle groups which NATO might put itself in Romania or Bulgaria and so forth.
Kadri, I know you touched on this somewhat in your previous answer, but I want to just try to dig in a little bit deeper and ask you, what are some other lessons that can be learned when it comes to NATO battle groups in Baltic states?
Some other lessons. I must agree with what Alexander says. I think Russia understands what that is about. I haven't heard anyone serious in Moscow ever claim that Rus troops represent a threat to Moscow. They know that Rus are here as a result of Russia's own actions. They came, or they were boosted after annexation of Crimea, and they are still nominally on rotational basis, which means that NATO actually adheres to the letter of the NATO-Russia Founding Act from 1997, that requires not to base permanent troops here. So, to be honest, I think that works fairly well. The only thing that I have recommended to the Baltic leaders is that we are under NATO umbrella, we are protected, we are fine, but it might be good to have some bilateral communication channels also with Moscow. If something happens, and things have happened, there was a case when Russian fighter jet crashed over Lithuania. There was a case when Spanish plane lost a missile over Estonia. You know, incidents like these that have no evil intent behind them, but that can create confusion. And especially when tensions elsewhere are high, people might get suspicious. So it would actually be quite good if you have some phone number in Moscow, be it among the political or military leadership, that you can dial if something like that happens, because communication channels via NATO headquarters, they work too. And Sakhar Gerasimov link between military chiefs. But it might be handy to have some bilateral communication channel as well.
Alexander, based on what Kadri was just saying there, that she thinks that some type of bilateral communication channel with Moscow would be appropriate, do you think that's something that would work?
Well, it might work, and I certainly won't do any harm if there was one. That would be very helpful. Issue with the Baltic states, so far as Russia is concerned, is not so much a military threat from them or from the allies being based there, but it's more kind of what Russians see as a very strong anti-Russian rhetoric and actions coming out of the Baltic states, and which, you know, been a consistent theme in Russian foreign policy discourse. That there are this kind of activists, anti-Russian activists, which pushing European Union and NATO into much more stringent anti-Russian direction. Sending weapons to Ukraine. I think Estonia sent some weapons, Lithuania been sending weapons and so forth. All those things basically kind of rattle Russians and kind of doesn't help with kind of overall trust between them. But yeah, establishing direct links in case there's a incident happening and making sure that it doesn't develop into anything more substantial would be a good thing. But there is a lot of annoyance and mistrust on each side between the Baltic states and the Russia, and which doesn't help overall security, I suppose.
Teresa, it looked to me like you were reacting to some of what Alexander and also what Kadri was saying. Did you want to jump in as well?
Sure. That when UK Defence Minister Ben Wallace was on his recent visit to Moscow, he also talked about creating a communication channel because there's so much disinformation going on now. And that's the key thing for military men, to have clear communication. So I think that his Russian counterparts were rather open to that. And I would also add that even though there's heightened tensions in the region, Moscow doesn't even have to invade to destroy the Ukrainian economy. We see flights are not landing or they're not in Ukrainian airspace. So this curtails a lot of trade and economic issues. Plus, they can cause problems in the Black Sea. We've seen them try to blockade the Black Sea. So there are a lot of issues that Ukraine can suffer under without any sort of direct attack. It's already hurting the economy. And as many people have pointed out, there's Russian intelligence all through Ukraine. So this can cause mischief. So there's really heightened tensions. Ukraine could be suffering this for months, neither at war and neither at peace.
Kadri, from your vantage point, is there a growing sentiment right now that the moves that NATO is making could perhaps make Europe more dangerous?
No, I don't think so. At least as concerns the immediate military reinforcements, I think with that everything is fine and logical. I think Moscow knows what it is, and that is not an issue. I think what could become an issue is if really the West totally refuses to engage with Moscow on any of the clauses that Moscow has raised. The future of Ukraine, which is not, of course, the West to decide, but it's linked to wider questions about the European security order. And, the Western position right now is that we have Paris Charter, that is the founding document for European security order that gives each country right to choose their own alliances, and all is fine with that, just that Russia doesn't follow it. I wonder if that position is really sustainable just like that, because that order, it was agreed in the early 90s, in 1990, when actually Russia subscribed to Western values, norms, worldview. Russia shared it. And that's why Paris Charter, that actually includes some contradictory clauses, right of countries to choose their own alliances, and it forbids countries to enhance their security at the expense of other countries. And these two can actually simultaneously be true only if a continent at large is sort of at peace. And we are not there any longer. I mean, Russia has made it quite clear that it doesn't share the worldview of the West. So what I worry a little bit is this unwillingness I see in many Western countries to accept that as a reality. We think we can moralize it into going away. I don't think that is the case. So in order to defend the order we like, we should have much better leverage in place, some actual leverage rather than just normative notions, however good they are. And I don't think we are there mentally yet. And there I can see a sort of danger, but if we insist on reality that Moscow doesn't treat as reality, then it could be dangerous in the longer run.
Alexander, Secretary General Stoltenberg has said that Russian videos of troops pull out that they don't show meaningful de-escalation. He added the troop numbers go up and down, but there's a trend of Russia sending more troops over the long run. From your perspective, do you think we're going to see that? Do you think we're going to see more troops added in the long run? Or do you think there will be a de-escalation or perhaps a meaningful de-escalation in the next few days?
Well, I'm not sure about the next few days. So far as kind of messages from Moscow concerns, they have been, since Monday, been sounding like they wanted to pursue a more kind of diplomatic track with meeting with Lavrov. Putin kind of agreed to that diplomacy might still work. And after that, there was followed announcements of troops withdrawals. I think there is issue of Ukraine is not going to go away, and Russia feeling that it has a military predominance in the region, which probably is one of its main cards to play, will be willing to use it again, and not in terms of outright invasion, but in terms of intimidation and posing credible threat towards Ukraine. And that will continue to go on until there are kind of real movements on issue of Ukraine's membership of NATO, or rather non-membership of NATO, so far as Moscow is concerned. The Minsk Accords and also a broader limits, discussion on limits on military support and cooperation between NATO and Ukraine, that Moscow wants to make sure that NATO, through the back door, even without membership, builds up military capacity for Ukraine so it can challenge Russia's predominance in the region.
Teresa, Secretary General Stoltenberg has also said that in addition to saying that he's seen no meaningful sign of Russian de-escalation on the ground, he had added that he does see signs of optimism. I mean, what do you make of that? Are there actually reasons to be optimistic right now?
Well, I think that was the whole idea, that they had pursued dialogue, and to get dialogue, they should have been de-escalating. So they were kind of signaling. We saw this with President Macron's visit to Moscow. He was signaling that the Russians were de-escalating, and he got this agreement from them, and all we saw was increased escalation. So there's been a steady path beaten to Moscow's door with world leaders, European leaders speaking to President Putin or their counterparts, Lavrov. And it's almost like they're playing with them, that there has been no de-escalation. And I think that that really kind of shows that the Kremlin's not serious about dialogue. And that was kind of, you know, dialogue means exchange of views. And I think that the Kremlin is just kind of saying, this is what we want, and you better give it to us. So they have suggested, NATO has suggested, to continue dialogue. They've talked about confidence-building measures, also discussions on missile defense issues, and troop placement. There's also the thorny issue of Iskander missiles, which can be used as nuclear missiles in Kaliningrad, which is right in the heart of Europe. So I think that there are a lot of areas to discuss. I think that Putin is trying, it's almost a Chinese concept, to win without fighting. So he's trying to feel his way around this and see what he can get by having all these troop movements. The Ukrainian government has called it blackmail. And, you know, we've seen a lot of dialogue with Putin and other members in the Kremlin. So from that point of view, he has succeeded. But he doesn't seem to be willing at all to have dialogue. It's either his way. And the other thing is, this is boomeranging on the Kremlin, because instead of having less NATO, we're seeing more NATO. Mm-hmm. Even Sweden and Finland, which are neutral countries, are considering joining NATO because this is becoming a very difficult neighborhood.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Teresa Fallon, Alex Titov, and Kadri Leek. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.